Welcome back to the Trees and Lines podcast. Today we talk with Leslie Cass, CEO of Lewis Services. We covered a range of topics with Leslie. It was a fascinating conversation. We explored Lewis's ESOP structure. We talked about what the impact of this election year is going to be on U.S. infrastructure. And of course, all the great work that Lewis and their team is doing in the market. So have a listen. It was great to have Leslie join us. Enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Trees and Lines. We're thrilled to welcome Leslie Cass, CEO of Lewis Tree Service today. Leslie is a very seasoned executive in the energy engineering spaces. She's formerly the CEO of Babcock & Wilcox and has been a leader of many other firms in the space. Leslie, welcome.
Thank you, Tej, and thank you, Phil. I'm glad to be here with you today. Leslie.
So Leslie, like this, I think you've been at Lewis now for a couple of years. You're 2 years into this opportunity. How's it going?
Oh, fantastic. Blessed to be in the space and at this company. It's been a real treat to get to participate in the industry. And Lewis was built on such a solid foundation. Lucky to be here.
Yeah. Lewis, I guess, has been around for about 85 years. Mm-hmm. Babcock, was around for 150 years. Like you've got a good reputation of stepping into these like real established organizations. Does that tend to be, when you first step in, a little daunting because there's so much history to work with, or does it give you some comfort that there's an established foundation that then you can kind of come in and focus on what you need to focus on to help continue to lead the company?
I think in all those cases, it's been such an established brand in the industry. Like B&W is just iconic, and Lewis in the mm-hmm. space has such a great brand. So to be able to take that and usually, little modernization, some things where we need to catch up and keep up. But those are great opportunities. Those are things that are within your control that you can go and help the organization to kind of tune up and continue to grow. Versus having to do that first, hey, we're here, we matter, we're relevant.
Right.
All that's behind you, and it's really just to capitalize on the good reputation that you built. So it's probably a little easier than, from my point of view, that's easier than starting from scratch, but maybe it's all that I know.
Is this the first company that you've led that's an ESOP?
Yes, it is.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I think, first of all, I think that's a very interesting structure. But for people that are listening to this, like maybe take us a little bit through that structure, some of the nuances, and what it's like leading a structure like that.
It's so much fun. That's one of the things that really attracted me here once I kind of figured it out, because nobody, very few people that, you don't have friends that work in an ESOP, and that's one of our challenges with our employees is getting them to understand the value of the ESOP, because for every, once you've been here for about 500 hours, every hour after that, you are building your retirement fund. Our union partners have their pension, but then for every other employee here, they're building their retirement fund with their little piece of the company. So you will continue to build and then, create that security that's game changing for families to have that security in addition to 401k match. But then we're working with and for each other. So the attitude's very different. That's our truck. These are our customers. Mm. This is our company and our dollar, our ESOP dollar. So you find folks are very creative in ways to cut costs because it's their money, not because it's the company and we go yell at them and say, hey, you need to be frugal. It's because they're saying, hey, this is our ESOP dollar. And I want to tell you about the deal I got with great excitement, because it's every dollar we save goes into everyone's retirement. And then as a leader, it's phenomenal because I can focus on two things, my customers and my employees. And I don't have to serve someone else's need for a return, someone else's need for, the market. As a publicly traded CEO, you spend a couple days, a quarter completely immersed with just explaining your story to investors, much less writing that story, reporting that story, making sure you're within all the disclosure, and just, it's maddening all the things you have to do just to keep that machine running. All that time is given back here. And from a planning perspective, because we're not on a timeline to return for somebody else, perhaps private equity, we just think long term. So if there's a little dip in the market, but we can take advantage of it, we can do that because I don't have to demonstrate something every single quarter. And it just frees up space and time to be creative and think long term like you can't. And I haven't found anywhere else. I guess maybe for a private owner you can.
Yeah.
But certainly in a structure like this, it's great.
I imagine your employees that have been around for a long time understand it.
Yes.
But most employees aren't in that kind of arrangement. So how do you bring them up to speed and get them invested?
It's really, it's storytelling. It's almost like safety. Make it personal, make it real. So that's one of the things we're working on right now is to have folks who've been here for a while who are planning how they're going to use their ESOP dollars or who have just retired and said, do you see this boat? This is my ESOP retirement boat that I bought myself. You know, do you see this? You know, we had at our annual meeting one of our employees who had just been in a clerical position in the building, and she retired, and she told the story that was just, you know, with tears in her eyes. She said, I thought I was going to have to take a part-time job in retirement. My financial advisor said, Sue, you can buy a new car. You should travel. What are you talking about? And the change that was for her and her outlook and what she's able to do. And then that, folks, like, whoa, you hear that story. Then you go and you explore more. But it's really got to be the folks who've been beneficiaries telling others, I think, to have it really stick.
What a message coming out of your office staff that changed her life. That's pretty cool.
I think 4,000 employees. Is that where you guys are right now? About 4,000. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you see with, you know, fresh eyes coming into this space. You know, as I feel like the market in line clearance and storm response is very controlled by a handful of companies, right? You know, your competition is also these other sizable, very historic businesses. You know, from a point of differentiation, from, you know, kind of separating from the market, doing different things, creating new value for the market, like what is sort of your game plan without obviously telling your competitors what you're going to do, but just from a very high level, like what are you guys trying to accomplish right now from this point kind of forward?
Well, I think it's really continuing that Lewis brand. I think that we grew, you know, and my predecessor, Tom Rogers, really grew this business with Dennis Brown and many others just off of good work leads to more work and continuing that, you know, never getting out there where we can't deliver what I like to call the Lewis experience or the customer promise is how we refer to that, such that, you know, you get what you pay for and you don't get a lot of headaches. I joke that our utility partners don't get paid to put up with the headaches you give them. And imagine, you know, what, Phil, you've been in this business forever, but, you know, you're in homeowner's yard. Your ability to create headaches is very high. You get opportunities every day to create a whole ton of headaches because you're dealing with reliability, homeowner's yard, safety. So if we can deliver on that, then it's being able to continue to develop leadership such that we can grow and deliver that Lewis experience in other places, because we can only grow as fast as we can build that leadership bench. So we're very focused on that and sources of leadership. I was at Veterans and Energy last week, you know, making sure that we continue that pipeline and others to continue to diversify and build our workforce and take on the skills maybe from outside our industry so that we can grow even further, as because we can't home grow them fast enough to continue to grow. And then thinking about, you know, technology will be done with you or to you. We're going to choose with you. It's coming. You heard it on your podcast recently with Cindy from Rappahannock.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That we need to understand that, how that affects our work, how we can be a partner in that and executing and delivering as the view on how we trim and where we trim changes. And what can we do to make that more efficient and stretch every dollar to get, you know, as much trim as you can for, you know, for the folks that we have out there. So it's an exciting and dynamic time.
It's an industry that's going to be more and more data driven. Mm-hmm. And technology is going to be a key to that. So interesting how you're adapting, or how are you adapting technology to your operations?
We've got a learning management system. We've got iPads out there, kiosk iPads. We're training people. We're figuring out other ways to collect data. We're installing, you know, additional technology on our trucks right now. We've got a whole, some of the in-cab camera, but additional data that we can collect from that, just again, to reduce windshield time, make us more efficient. How can we continue to look for opportunities to do more things while we're out there, while that truck's rolling? What else can we do? Because I don't know about you, but the robot with the chainsaw is not showing up in my yard anytime soon. So there's a certain part of this business that I think, you know, for a long time, we're still going to need climbers to do that delicate work and roping and rigging, because we have structures out there. So I love it because the industry will be here. There'll be some change, but there's still a desperate need for what we do. It's not going to go away.
So how are you finding the new employees? Everybody's complaining about a workforce that's hard to keep up with what's out there.
It is challenging. And I think as an industry, how can we tell the story of, if you love to be outside, if you don't want to be contained by four walls, as my guy said, if you want a new view every day, you know, come join us and have a career that's rewarding. And it's challenging. It's a hard day's work. So sometimes it's not for everybody. But how do we appeal to those folks and say, you know, it's a hard day's work bussing tables too, but you could come work for us, be outside, get some, you know, build a retirement, have some benefits, and making sure we sell the story and the purpose and the mission. You know, our folks love to go on storm because it's so rewarding when you get cheered into a neighborhood and you're like, I did something good today. And we don't get credit for it like we should, but we do something good every day, keeping the reliability of the electricity for our customers. So I think it's really working together with Center for Energy Workforce Development, VIE, Veterans in Energy, other organizations that can help us tap into new, and obviously UAA and others to help us together tap into new pools of labor. But I was talking to one of our division managers yesterday, and I'm like, where did I catch you on vacation? It sounds like a party. He's like, no, I'm at a high school job fair. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, but that's great. And then that we need to be out there and touching those people and giving them the option, because until I came here, I had no idea that this work was even being done. And so the first part's education.
That most in our industry got in it without knowing that there was an industry there. So that's a...
Leslie, like, grid resiliency is obviously like a topic, right? There's an incredible amount of stress on this U.S. electric system. The infrastructure is vulnerable. Some would call it decaying. And the reinvestment in that is expensive. It's happening. It's necessary, even as you start thinking about electric vehicles and microgrids and how all that's going to kind of create different types of stresses on the system. You know, when people think of Lewis, you know, line clearance comes to mind, right? Like, that's kind of your core business. Have you thought about, or are you thinking about, without having to disclose anything here, other things that you may want to do as it relates to grid resiliency? Like, are you guys thinking about expanding your offerings, or are you going to continue to be more dominant and attempt to be more dominant in your core offering?
Well, I think you've probably noticed we went from Lewis Tree Service to Lewis Services because, as I like to say, what else can you do with muscle and trucks? We've conquered some of the most difficult parts of distributed workforce with great labor that we can train to do lots of things and having that fleet out there. So we're definitely looking at what else can we do. And we do see that the number and types of work, I think it drives my team crazy, but there are some poles right outside my window here where I've watched them do a tremendous amount of upgrades to serve a new huge apartment complex for Rochester Institute of Technology that's right down the road. And seeing how many different vendors are there and the types of work they're doing, and some safety practices are better than others. You're like, whew, you know, we could do that. We could do that better. And so thinking about what else can we do to support the industry and to diversify our offerings and be more valuable to our customers. So it's definitely something that we think about.
You're in 27 states, something of that nature. Is that distributed fairly evenly across the U.S., or do you guys have more of some regional concentrations where you're bigger? Like, where are you and where are you not?
I think we're We go as far west as Texas and then kind of up the Mississippi and back east. We, of course, have a concentration in the Northeast, which is our historical base in New York. And then, but then it's interesting. We go down and then we'll spring up in pockets of places where we've worked historically in some of the bigger cities. And we've got some new contracts we're really excited about that expand to new areas. So we're a little bit of everywhere and concentrated in a handful of places. So it's a great platform to build from because there's so much connectivity and there's some of that white space where we can continue to fill in. Yep. And then you can work with customer budgets when one's down and one's up, and you know how it is with the PUC, things tend to change. And we can support all those munis and co-ops you know, along the way who need the service. So it's nice to have a geographic footprint where you can swing in and out of different customers, and that's part of the secret sauce of delivering that Lewis experience. You can't just hire random people in a random place and expect to have it happen.
Absolutely. I ask because in your previous leadership roles, I know you spent some time in Canada, and we've been having some chats with people internationally. You know, of course, vegetation management, utility services is not just limited to North America. And you know, what we saw in Hawaii and what we've seen even in Europe this past summer. Is there any plans for you, or are you, is anything piqued your interest to look at global expansion as well?
I think right now there's so much opportunity in the U.S. We will be open to that.
Yep.
And certainly not too far foot. I've worked in a full global business, and I'll be honest, not having to wake up in the middle of the night for a call with your customer, you know, in the Philippines is really nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, really nice. You know, or Vietnam or somewhere like that, but it's really offset, or Egypt, or anyway, I don't miss that.
Yeah.
But I do think within North America, there's a ton of opportunity. And you know, even like you said, in the U.S., there's so much opportunity because you're not going to really get a new right-of-way. So what are you going to do to take this one and optimize it? And that's going to take years to continue to build all that out.
You talked about diversity of services. Obviously, to staff that, you have to be looking at diversity of your workforce. You know, how are you going about reaching and bringing in, you know, I'm sure Hispanic workers are a growing part of your workforce and other groups. So what's the strategy?
Well, first it's if you can see it, you can be it. So we have a diverse board that demonstrates that, you know, folks from different walks of life and backgrounds can be anything at our company. And then continuing to provide that leadership development and training at all levels, and then recruit. We have a director of DE&I, and she's helping to educate us to make sure that we're just aware, right? So that people feel included, that we don't sort of accidentally create barriers or create something where someone's not comfortable, mainly out of understanding. I mean, we're employee-owned, we're all about the people, but you can alienate a group or make them not feel welcome just because you don't understand the customs, the things that matter. We're working on language, both Spanish and English. I'm learning Spanish. We've got some folks learning English, you know, making sure that we can communicate very seamlessly and have that, you know, all of our materials, like everyone in the industry, you know, are both in Spanish and English, to make sure that the message comes through clearly. Folks don't have to work hard to understand what we mean by safety, as a great example. So, many opportunities, and I think there are many untapped sectors of the workforce, women in particular, that you know, we're making inroads, but you know, like the whole of the energy industry, we're not, I joke, it's a success, I complain, but when there's a line at the women's room at an industry conference, you're like, well, ladies, this is progress, we're getting there. I used to be in here by myself, so it works.
That's positive spin there.
That is positive.
Yeah. I like the, if you see it, you can be it. Because there were a long time that we talked about diversity, but then all the advertisement, all the pictures, everything was anything but diverse. So you can talk about it, but it's so much more helpful to see it.
Yeah.
Leslie, this is obviously, you know, a very important election year for a lot of reasons, but like, you know, specifically around the discussion of infrastructure. You know, and so have you started to like look at or consider, you know, if the administration changes, what the implications of that would be for, you know, your particular sector and what Is it a positive? Is it a negative? Is it basically a no change? Like, how closely are you watching, you know, what the tea leaves are saying and what the impacts could be based on who's in office come, you know, November?
I think for our utility executives, it can be a big change, right? The mandate will really, I think, shift. I do think the mandate around reliability is not going anywhere. And so that work is going to happen. There's no question. Grid hardening, as we continue to electrify, folks. I heard one of the CEOs talk about it, 2 years ago. He said, you know, it was one thing when your power went out 10 years ago and you just don't open your fridge and you play cards by candlelight. Everybody thought that was kind of fun. Now you can't work. You can't run your electric car. Your world stops. You know, heaven forbid, your teenager's phones drain. I mean, the world stops, and it's a whole different animal. And you see that in how the utilities are responding to outages and the public pressure they get. That's not going anywhere. So, on the infrastructure side, I think you'll definitely see a pivot, perhaps from one to another. You know, from a cleaner mandate to a more electrons mandate potentially. And that'll affect some of the ancillary pieces of the business where we sit, we get to watch it. We'll support whatever you want to build. But from a utility perspective, they've got to then go figure out what's the best use of their capital dollar and how do they plan. It's pretty difficult to plan long-term infrastructure on a short-term agenda. And they get to do that every day. So I think it's really them partnering with their states rather than the federal level to say, okay, what are we going to do here in this state to at least keep our grid stable and make sure that the electrons are flowing. But it'll be challenging for them.
What else do you see coming out of the C-suites of utilities that will be driving you and Lewis in the future?
Technology, technology, technology. And they're looking for, again, a way to stretch those dollars, especially on the maintenance side. You know, how do we stretch those dollars and get the most reliability we can for every dollar we spend? And again, fortunate for us, it gets back to, you know, you can spend it on whatever hardening you want, but you don't take care of the trees, it won't help you. So, so I think we definitely continue to get some of that spent, but how can we partner with them to make sure those dollars go as far as they can and to understand the direction that they're going with the technology and the data and maximize that? Because you can have, you know, I like to call it the ivory tower. You can make up all these great ideas, but they come to life in the field with us. And so how are we a partner in that to make sure that it's effective and effective for the long term? Because you can cut every little branch that's sticking out. That is the most expensive and efficient way to get your work done.
Yeah. Philosophically, with technology, are you more of, because there's like a huge number of little technologies, sophisticated technologies in the space, whether it's collecting data, analyzing data, you know, apps, all this kind of stuff. Has your historical sort of MO as leading businesses been a partnership type strategy with best in class sort of tech partner? Or are you more of a, you know what, I like to build something in-house, brand it with Lewis, you know, where we control not only the data, but the impact, and we can scale and, you know, play with things and toggles. Like, do you have sort of a, or is it just on a case by case basis you'll approach things? Like, what's been your general historical approach?
Yeah, my view, especially here, I think is partner, because that is a whole separate,
that's a different animal. Yeah,
different animal. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, have people. It's great because when I talk to folks, you know, that we're piloting various technologies and say, hey, listen, I got no interest in building what you build, but I can tell you what happens in the real world with our team. I go out in the field with you and explain this. And they have no interest in hiring craft labor and getting trucks. They're like, yeah, we don't.
Right.
This is terrifying to me. This is like outside and in the woods. And I'm an inside, you know, Nintendo kind of guy. I want to spend my weekend inside. I'm like, perfect. Right. We have the perfect marriage here. I'll do the thing you don't like. You do the thing I'm not really that awesome at. But it creates a great partnership because when those folks realize, you know, the power of actually seeing it from the ground and getting that feedback from the people who do the work, it makes the product that much better.
In your first couple of years, can you maybe highlight something for us that kind of shocked you, maybe surprised you, complexity, an industry norm, something that you were like, oh, I didn't realize that, or, you know, this was very unexpected. Like, what is something that has really kind of like shocked and awed you a little bit?
I was, and no matter, even, you know, B&W fully global, you could still reach everybody on a Teams meeting, right? If you want to have an all hands meeting, you could have an all hands meeting. Mm-hmm. Not so much out in the truck at the end of the, you know. Mm-hmm. So really the reliance on our, you know, on our first line supervisors to carry that message, our general forepersons too, to carry that message, and being so distributed, just understanding that their experience at Lewis is really their local leadership. That's what Lewis is to them. And so making sure that we're relentless about training and equipping and helping that local leadership to be successful so that those employees want to be here and want to work with us. And having to just have it so distributed was like shock and awe. And I tell everybody that interviews here, I'm like, look, you got to understand, you know, how you're not going to be able to, you know, just send out an email and everybody's going to read it. That's not how we roll. But in the same way, it's really powerful. And being able to go out and spend time with our crews and so I said, I'm here in your office today. And I want to hear about what you do and how you do it and how you're going to keep each other safe. That's a great tool too, to show them that we care and it matters. It makes us, now, all in leadership here, better because we get what it, you know, like the ivory tower people again, right? You got to understand what they're really going through and what it's like. So
yeah.
No one here in the office complains about the HVAC.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think it's nice. Cold?
Yeah. It's nice to hear you recognize the local supervisor. Yeah. They are key to so many things that we try to get done.
It's the toughest job in any, just any company really, but in with our distributed workforce, and they really have to wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
And I admire them.
Leslie Phil definitely has educated me a lot on the importance and the you know, the different faces and the people that are driving really the impact in this space. And something that stood out to me, again, also being fairly new, a few years into the space, is how joyous this community of professionals is. Like, they, the pride that everyone at every level takes in their work, first of all, their enjoyment of the outdoors, their understanding of the environmental impacts, their interest in that space, and then obviously their contribution in overall reliability is a fun sector to be in. I've really enjoyed it. Like, it's been a really, really fun place to kind of cut your teeth and you know, that sort of thing. I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's now, a great industry. We just have to get the word out.
I'm with you, Phil. And Tasha, the reception coming in as an outsider, you're worried. People are like, you know, I mean, I replaced Tom Rogers had been with the company for over 47 years.
Right.
Those are big shoes to fill.
You've been pretty welcomed, right?
And the support. And I have to credit him and the leadership team here, but just the employees were curious and something new, and can you teach us something new? And just that open attitude that happens at every conference and talking to, you know, all of our partners, customers, it is just a super welcoming place.
Before we kind of part today, I really did want to get your kind of perspective on something that we're seeing in the market. You know, obviously private equity, capital, you know, people that are deploying money from all different places see this as a very lucrative space to be in. I know Asplund, of course, has taken outside money. Osmos, I think, now is private equity backed. And that creates somewhat of an arms race, right? Now you've got these very well capitalized companies that you're competing with. You're continuing to retain a very disciplined, controlled thing, right? But that can lead to some challenges in terms of keeping up with this, what I would call an arms race, right? For lack of a better word. How do you view that? Does it distract you, or are you staying on course with what you guys are doing and not getting caught up in trying to scale too quickly or whatever the case may be?
I think, you hit the nail on the head. We don't have that kind of pressure for a return. Now, we do have pressure for a return. These are retirement dollars, and we need to make sure that our employees, that their funding grows and that they can have a really great retirement for all their hard work. But it lets us think a little bit longer term. We don't feel the need to scale up so quick that we don't deliver, right? We make sure that we can still deliver and we have the resources and we have that strong, strong foundation that was built. So from a resource perspective, you know, we feel quite secure. We can get whatever materials we need. And then it's really building that leadership, building that ownership. And I would say, you know, I've got a magic ingredient they don't have, which is the employee ownership and that sense of belonging and, you know, family feel that we have that is pretty tough to replicate in a private equity scenario. But I will say private equity makes you sharper. I have, you know, worked with them and had them as competitors in past lives. And I've learned a lot of important, valuable lessons about making sure you get into the details of your business and you run it as, you know, as efficiently as you can. And, you know, in making sure that every investment pays back, right? That you're spending wisely and that you're thinking strategically. So that'll keep us on our toes for sure. But we're happy to take up the challenge.
Yeah. Oh, good. The you know, before we kind of head out today, like, you know, we wanted to also just give you an opportunity, you know, to talk to us about, you know, anything that you've got new coming up or, you know, things that you want, you know, the market, the industry, our listeners to know about Lewis, you know, because our audience, of course, is growing. It's very diverse from a listening perspective. And I think it's a real treat for folks to be able to listen to someone leading such a historic and important organization. Is there anything you want to kind of message out to folks in the marketplace about Lewis and what you're up to?
I think, you know, what I've discovered since being here, we're bigger than you think. We're like a best kept secret.
Yeah, you are.
We're bigger than you think. We're on the move. We're an incredible place to work and to learn and to develop. We're always seeking talent on our team. And we're a great partner. We take that utility partnership very, very seriously. I've been on the other side. I know what it feels like to be let down by a vendor, and it creates a lot of pain and heartache. And that's you know, that's really our big selling point, is a good price, but for a product you can rely on. And we're Lewis Services. What else can we do with muscle and trucks? If there are things where, you know, you're not being served with that same customer promise, call us and maybe we can do it. We might be able to figure it out. We'd love to partner with you on figuring out what's next with our team, because we think we can deliver that, and we're fierce guardians of making sure that we take care of our customers.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Leslie, we thank you so much for taking the time today and joining us. You know, you're leading a great organization. You know, it sounds like you're off to a stellar start. We wish you all the success. We'll obviously be watching. We probably might even see you occasionally in the field and, you know, have a beer and catch up. But thanks again for making the time and sharing a little bit about what you guys are doing. And
it's fantastic. Thank you, Leslie. This was good.
This is awesome. Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
No, thank you. And thanks to the industry for such a warm welcome.
Absolutely.
And to the Lewis team for being out there every day and for staying safe, because that's what it's all about, right?
Going, absolutely.
Getting the job done, but coming home safe.
Coming home safe, absolutely.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you both.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's it for this episode of the Trees and Lines podcast, brought to you by Iapetus Infrastructure Services. If you like the show, please give us a rating of 5 stars on Apple or Spotify. If you have any questions or comments on any of our episodes or ideas for topics or guests in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Please contact us at treesandlines@iapetusllc.com. We'll chat with you soon.